Heyo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, and I am truly happy to be joined today by a guest who has been a member of one of my favorite bands, Typo Negative. He formed the Seventh Void, and now we are here to talk about Silver Tomb and their new album, Edge of Existence, which is coming out November 1st. Kenny Hickey, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
I'm great. Like I say, Typo Negative, one of my favorite bands of all time, so I'm glad that you guys are able to keep busy, and it's great to see a new album from you after quite a while.
Yeah, it's been 10 years. I think the last album was 2009.
Yeah, so that's right. The Heaven Is Gone, yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of, a lot of stuff went down since then. We lost Peter, lost Typo, so I kind of went through a lot of stuff and really tried to, I think the last time I toured was 2011 after that. I really tried to kick music, period, like it was some kind of bad habit or something, something I've been doing since I'm probably 12 years old, and I guess I wasn't that successful at kicking it, so, it creeped back into me, and I felt the need to play again and make music again.
Well, and that's something that I've seen a lot, with all the musicians that I've talked to is like, you can try, but there's just something that's just deep inside of you. And I think it really matters so much more that you can get to be in a good place with yourself to be able to keep performing.
I think that, it's something, if you're a musician, it's something that you don't choose, it chooses you. Sooner or later, you put a toe in the water and you get sucked right back in. It's not like you can't keep away from it. So I've decided not to even try to do that anymore. Go on, move forward, keep playing music and see where it leads me.
Yeah. Well, the new album from Silver Tomb, Edge of Existence, I've listened to it, and I think it's an awesome album. It's definitely, it goes in so many different places, and I really enjoy those directions. So why don't you tell me a little bit about the writing process for it?
A lot of the writing process was done in my wife's walk-in closet. I converted it into a studio. It's only about maybe, 8x6. It's very small, and it's very conducive to writing at 2 a.m. It's very it's soundproofed. You have a couple of beers in there, dim the lights down low, and see what comes creeping out of you. That's how it starts. The pre-production starts that way, and I bring you ideas down. Usually, I'll get Johnny for 2 or 3 days here or there. He lives in Texas now, so. Mm. One thing I definitely don't do myself is rhythm section stuff. So I would get him into my garage and bring down an electronic kit. He'd be like, what do you want for this? What do you want for that? And we develop the rhythm section of it. And then, of course, bring it down to the rest of the band, rehearse. So everybody puts their own riffs in, color on it. Joe writes them. And Joe James, my guitar player, writes some amazing leads. And Aaron Juice is great at orchestrating stuff, adding strings and different sounds and stuff. So, it's really like the core of it starts, in my wife's walk-in closet, and it ends up, in the studio in a live situation.
Now, when we talk about live, I know that you guys played live in September. So how easy are the songs to kind of translate to the live arena, the live stage?
Well, I was really worried about it. Just like we used to worry in Typo, because, a lot of the stuff in Typo, there's so much going on with 47 tracks that some of it just couldn't be done live, But it ended up really translating very, very well, obviously there's a lot of interludes and sound effects and atmospheric parts that had to be sampled in, for beginnings and songs and stuff. So we decided to play to a click the whole thing, so we can at least have those samples and stuff. So we play the whole record through a click line, so it's the same exact tempos. And Aaron Juice has been able to add in all the strings and everything and play them live. And plus, sometimes he switches to guitar.
Oh, wow.
And he sings a series of backing vocals with me. And Joe James, incredible guitar player live. So all his leads come out perfect. And it really translated great, actually. It's only going to get better.
Well, that's cool. Now, do you have more tours scheduled already?
We are playing a headlining show here in Brooklyn at St. Vitus, December 21st. And then we're going to be going out in March, doing all in North America. So I can't say, you know, the exact date. Everything's not confirmed yet. So, but we're definitely going out in spring.
Yeah, gotcha. So this band, Silver Tomb, is basically a lot of the same members from Seventh Void, with just a couple of new ones thrown in. And I know that you had talked about the idea of changing the name because of changing the musical style a little bit. So maybe speak about some of the differences between Seventh Void and Silver Tomb.
Well, I mean, there's a lot more different. There's a lot of elements in it that I would have never done in Seventh Void or Typo. I mean, it's acoustic interludes, you know, is Sleeping on Nails and Wine is like an old rock and roll song with rock and roll backups. And, you know, there's thrash parts in there. There's string sections, there's horn sections. I mean, there's still a doom rock and roll element to it, like Seventh Void, but I think it has a lot more width on in styles and where it can go, and what it can evolve to, especially from this point on. I mean, I already have more than half of the next record written, and it's totally not like, it's even further from anything we did in Seventh Void, even further from what I did with Typo. So it's a springboard, and it is going to evolve even further away from. I don't believe in repeating yourself artistically over and over again, because it's just redundant, you know. I mean, if you're not going to explore somewhere new, if you're not going to do something different or take something to its natural evolution, its culmination, then, you know, it's just wasting time, you know, and wasting a listener's time. So I think changing the name and adding so many elements, especially instruments now, to it has given it that springboard to develop into something completely new.
Yeah, because I guess it's really important to try to, because fans, it's very easy for fans to associate a certain sound with a band. So by changing the name, it kind of gives you that freedom to start with a clean slate and just go from there. And it doesn't matter what you do, because now Silver Tomb will be associated with all the different musical styles that you actually want to hit, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that I think that Seventh Void was limited where it could go musically. And I think, you know, adding the keyboard section, you know, two more guitarists and, you know, and just broadening our musical style, it's turned it into a new animal, you know. And I think that the sky's the limit with it. You know, the next record is going to be even more different than this one, you know, and I want to take that to its culmination. So you can't take it any further, and then I'll end this band and start a new one.
Well, I guess that makes total sense, right? I mean, tell me about, because I know with Typo, like so many of the guys were together, you guys were together for so long, and you having so many of the same members here. Tell me about like kind of the brotherhood feeling of the people that you play music with.
Well, it's like going to war, you know? I mean, you're going to war, what do? You live in close quarters together, you suffer together. You experience the ups and downs and the disappointments and the moments of victory. You know, it's a roller coaster industry, the music industry. You know, one day you're hot, the next day you're not, and it goes over and over again. especially with typo. We not only artistic lives depended on it, but also, you know, our economic lives. And, you know, we put a whole lifetime into it. So, you know, when things went bad, it really, you know, you really crashed down hard about it. And you go through that together, you know. You go through it all together in a, you know, 6 foot wide by, you know, 40 foot long bus, you know, with bunks. You know, and that's a bonding experience. Even though if you do it too long, you start fighting, you know, and there's a lot of tension. But, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, like, especially with an experience like losing Petey, you realize how much you mean to each other, you know. You know, even Josh is my brother-in-law, who's married my wife's sister. So I see him, I see him on holidays and stuff. So, and I look at him and he looks at me, and you know that we both know that we have an understanding about our experiences together, and nobody else will understand that. Only Johnny and Peter.
Right. You
know, because of all the stuff we've been through. You know, that's the kind of special bond it creates. You do it long enough, and you depend on each other.
Now, tell me as well, like, as New Yorkers, like, how much does New York matter to the music that you do?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, that's just an odd question. We never, like, stood around and said, we want to sound like this New York band, or we want to sound like that New York band, you know. I mean, Typo had a New York attitude as far as the humor. You know, and the sarcasm and stuff, but I wouldn't call it New York music, you know.
Right. Well, I guess that's what I mean, because I've talked to other people from New York, and I know that they just have an attitude, or something from New York has come into their personality that does shine through their music.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of sarcasm. People from New York are hilarious. You know, my friends that I grew up with, they make me laugh so hard my stomach turns inside out, you know, especially from Brooklyn. But there is a sense of humor and cynical, you know, attitude.
That's awesome. That's so
probably the only thing that would have that I could identify that would bind us all together as New York fans.
So now, one of the things that I find really interesting to the new album is the album cover. And I know that you intended to get to make it look like one of those 1970s blacklight posters. And so where did that thought process come from? I mean, it's a great cover.
It was me and Joe James, my guitar player. And that's what I said I wanted to go for. I wanted to go for like a super 70s blacklight poster. I wanted to make it feel like, you know, when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, me and my friends, we cut up from school and we had this garage in front of my friend Tommy Fitz's house, in the back of his house. And it had a Sabaret wagon in there, a hot dog wagon. And it had all blacklight posters, and we used to go in the garage and smoke pot all day with the blacklight posters. I said, I wanted that vibe, you know. And then, you know, Joe came up with like the color scheme, and Hank Hell, he's our art director. He puts it all together and stuff. And then the idea of the central figure was to have to be like an image, like the ascension of Christ, like the famous images of the ascension of Christ when he's ascending up above the apostles, except running the apostles out, took the apostles out and put sort of this sci-fi blacklight poster theme in there with the planets. Mm-hmm. Making it seem like he's ascending into space. And Joe got his friend, Rodrigo Contreras is his name, he's a tattoo artist, to do the image, the Christ image. And he was like, how do you want me to pose the image? And at the time, I had gotten hit by a car last year. Right? And,
that's right.
I got laid up pretty bad. My left shoulder was screwed up. I just got an operation, and I was in my pajamas, and I'm like, well, you know, I had my wife take a picture of me, and I did the pose of the skeleton, of how I wanted the skeleton rising up, because I didn't want the whole, you know, holding up the peace sign, you know, the whole Christ sign or anything like that. I didn't want it that religious. And I did the pose, and then he ended up just superimposing his artwork right over my own form. So it's actually me as a Christ skeleton, and that's how it came together.
That is absolutely crazy. I mean, it's a great story. I mean, how hard then was it for you to, after the accident, to kind of get back to playing music? How long did that take?
It took a long time. I got hit last November, and face smashed in, nose busted, shoulder. I screwed up my rotator cuff and my labrum. But I didn't get into surgery until February last year. And that healing process took forever. It was 3.5 months I was laid up.
Wow.
You know, I couldn't even pick up a guitar. So you're seeing that in the cover, the picture in the cover where I'm posing, you can see my left shoulder. My left arm is not quite as raised as my right arm because it was too painful to do it.
Oh, wow. Okay. I see that now. That's really interesting.
So it took 4 or 5 months after that. So it's been it's a year now. And now I finally have full motion back into my shoulder. I've been playing now since like this summer, you know, since July I started playing my acoustic and all that. But it was really rough, like hanging for 3 months being laid up. I couldn't even play an instrument. I watched way too much Netflix, dude.
All right. I suppose that's it. Yeah, if that's all you can do, then that's what you wind up doing. So, you know, I love the single Waiting and of course the new one, Rite of Passage, Crossing Over. I think Not Your Savior is probably my favorite song from the album. I'm wondering if there's songs on the album that you find like tougher to sing just from a sheer emotional perspective.
I would find probably Sleeping on Nails and Wine the hardest one to sing from an emotional perspective, because that's the one that's really about Peter. It's directly about Peter. But we have not done that live. I don't think we're going to do it live. Mm. I don't think it can be done live. And it's four-part harmonies. And the only other person in the band that can sing is Juice. The rest of them sound like a bunch of drunks with their teeth knocked out. So, you know, I don't know if we could pull that one off. So we're not going to sing to some canned tracks or anything like that. We won't do that. There's no way we're going to do that. So, yeah, it would be a tough one to do. And if I was to do it, I have to do it really staccato, just an acoustic. You know, maybe we'll attempt it at the next rehearsal.
Yeah, that would be something for sure. When you're out and playing, like, how do you decide what kind of a set you're going to perform?
Well, it's really easy at this point. We have one record. It's 40 minutes long. So, you know, it's a matter of what are we going to cut out? Because, you know, if let's say I got to play for 40 minutes, I got to speak to the audience too. I can't just, you know, we can just rock it through the friggin' the set, you know, and not say anything. So, you know, you're going to take out at least 5-10 minutes for that. So it's really, what songs are we going to cut out? You know, one would be obviously Sleeping on Nails and Wine. That would only take 2.5 minutes out, you know. And then got to cut something else. Obviously has to be cut. This show we're doing, the headlining show, obviously we don't have to cut anything because it's our own show. But I think the most positions we're going to be in is going to be like when we're in September with Life Agony, where we're going to be opening up. We're going to have 40 minutes. We're going to have to cut some songs.
Now,
so that's really, it's decided through practical means, you know.
Right, right. Now, on the headlining one, obviously you can do Seventh Void songs. Do you do any Typo Negative songs?
We haven't done any Seventh Void or Typo Negative, no other bands except this one yet. We're not close to the idea.
Right.
I'm kind of close to the idea of doing Seventh Void songs outside of... If I was to do Seventh Void songs, I'd revive the band, you know, or a reunion, something like that, you know. They want to confuse people further, so...
Right.
New band, a new thing. But I would not be against, of course, playing a couple of excerpts from Typo songs, you know, like the parts in Typo songs I sang, you know.
Okay. Right. Yeah, it makes sense for sure.
Yeah. That's what I would do.
Now, when it comes down to singing as well, I mean, I know that you did sing during the Typo. Now, was that something that you kind of learned while you were in Typo, or was that something that you had, that you knew that you were a good singer before you joined Typo?
No, I think I always loved to sing, you know, and I sang my whole life. And then, you know, with the Typo stuff, it started with doing backups and, like, just so happy, you know, Peter's got the lows and I got the highs and we sounded really good together. And then, you know, Peter would often write stuff that was out of his register, was too high for him. So those are the parts that would take over, you know. You want to go out because it's raining and blowing, that whole stuff. And then, you know, after that, he just started writing parts in for me.
Mm.
You know? So that's how it developed. And, you know, I just went for it. They just screamed and went for it. You know, I had no technical ability or anything like that until I really blew up my voice somewhere down the line. We're on some tour where I got nodes on my vocal cords. And we were just starting off at 7.2, and I was like, hell, how am I going to handle this shit if I'm blowing my voice up, you know, doing Typo stuff? And I ended up going to one of the best rock and roll folk instructors in the world, Don Lawrence. You know, a guy taught Lady Gaga and Mick Jagger and all them, because he's right here in New York.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I went to him for like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, and he showed me how to preserve my voice and keep it going and how to strengthen it. And that's when I started really learning technique, you know, and actually what the hell I'm doing, you know.
So, I'm just wondering, like, so if there's one thing that you could, besides, I guess, keeping up your voice, what's one piece of advice that your current self would give your younger self?
Well, I don't understand.
Like if you could go back to and talk to your younger self that's just starting out with Typo, like, is there a piece of advice that you would give yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Don't touch cocaine.
Oh.
Yeah, really. Don't touch drugs. That's a pitfall in rock and roll. It brings so many people down. I've seen so many go. You know, it ruins lives. And that's the one thing I regret, you know, like more than anything. That. And also, save your money. Don't spend all your money on buses and 5-star hotel rooms and all this shit. Because before you know it, you know, you're going to be going down the downside of it and you'll be broke.
Yeah.
Two very good pieces of advice.
Yeah, it must be really hard to like, when you get that life, it must be really hard to not want to live as much of that life as possible, eh?
Yeah, you think it's never going to go away, you know what I mean? Everything waxes and wanes. Everything has, you know, its curvature. You know, and when you're young and you're getting it and it's all thrown at you, you just think it's going to last forever. But you got to watch, though, as far as living the life is not being a drug addict. I don't think anyone considered that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what happens when you screw with dangerous drugs, you know, and they're everywhere. And people throwing them at you. You know, you just got to, you have to draw a line in the sand. Wow. It's one thing, partying and having a good time with your friends. You know, there's a lot of Saturday nights when you're on the road. Every night's a Saturday night. It's a really bad pitfall.
Yeah.
You got to be very careful. You know, one day you'll turn around and you say, Jesus, I just wasted 2 years of my life. I could have been having the greatest time. And then, you know, where was I? I was screwed up, you know, on substances.
Well, that's crazy. I know I'm running out of time, and I'm really glad that you're still here to play music and still here to talk to us. So I want you to be able to tell the fans where they're going to find Silver Tomb and Edge of Existence when it comes out.
You'll find it on all streaming services, and also if you go to Silver Tomb Music on Facebook, Silver Tomb Music on Instagram, you'll find all the links you need to order it from Amazon down the line.
All right. Well,
and you can get the LP. You get the LP, or you can just stream it.
Awesome. And that comes out November 1st. So I know I urge everyone to go and have a listen because I think it's an awesome album. Definitely different. And I look forward to hearing what you guys are going to come up with next. Kenny Hickey, big fan of the music. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
All right. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Well, hopefully talk to you later with the new album.
Cool.
All right. Thanks, Kenny.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
you.